Hey, State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy is back for a Techie Talk. How are you, Techie?
Hey Joe, good to see you on a wonderful Wednesday. It's actually
Yes.
off, no, not a T weekday today. It's a W.
It's yeah, a rare W, exactly. And my gosh, we're at almost at the end of July.
I know it's been a very, as we talked about many times already, many times now, it's been a very interesting legislative cycle we're having up here with a lot of uncertainty in Washington, D.C., which trickle downs to us. Plus, getting things moving on our committee structures and getting our work done in really kind of a truncated pace, given how late joint rules formally came out, even though public hearings were going on before joint rules. We just weren't in the process of giving reports to bills. Now that we have joint rules established over 6 weeks ago, I mean, my committee has been rapidly processing bills, whether they get a federal board of study order or whatever recommendation from the chair to the committee members. So it's been extremely busy. We're about, I think we're about 200, and I want to say almost 270 bills because we keep getting more every day. But I think we pushed out, close to 70 of them. We hope to get over 100 bills processed and out of committee by middle of August. So, we'll open a polling period now for a due date this week. They expect to open another polling period sometime in mid-August. My committee members have been made aware that, you expect to see more paperwork coming through your emails and respond back to the committee staff and the chair. And then we'll have one hearing in September because I had some scheduling problems in September, so we reduced to one. And then we're looking at four consecutive hearings in October if necessary. Some of this contingent on, what new bills come to the committee that are late filed. So we're better off having more dates and less dates as we close in towards the end because it's a little bit unpredictable. And for a reminder, folks, joint rule 10 this year is December 3rd, 2025, meaning that, all bills have to be processed out of the committee, pretty much post Thanksgiving.
Any bills that you like, Tacky, with some of your favorites?
I wouldn't say I have a lot of favorites. As you all know, my committee is mostly boring technical bills. So, we have some more language access bills for the various boards of registration, where there's a high propensity for non-English speakers to participate in. Cosmetology is an example of that. Hoisting is an example of that. We've been looking at stuff regarding boards of registrations with the Division of Occupational Licensures, but I mean, you guys know it's a board of registration. Various issues regarding access to licensing and some of the barriers that may be there that need to be updated or maybe not. We've been looking at those things in the governor. Has proposed this massive streamlining of those agencies as well, of which we have not seen the formal bill yet. I'm aware also that the agency has updated its website, so it's hopefully user-friendly when you next go on to it. I do actually have a real estate brokerage license as being an attorney. I'm entitled to one actually by being an attorney. It's actually in the statute, so I gotta renew that license as well. It'll come towards the end of this month. So I'll be actually a little test subject of whether or not the board's website portal is accessible to people.
Okay, well, you'll have to report back and let us know how that works out.
Yeah, we got some other stuff, some small technical bills on alcohol regarding trying to prohibit basically unlicensed sales of alcohol through various loopholes regarding direct sale to customers by putting closed sales but no license to do so kind of thing.
Oh.
Yeah, no, you'd be surprised how many people try to skip the system. And the reason it's important, not just because of consumer safety, because you should know where your alcohol comes from, it is a controlled
Yes.
substance, but also they also try to get around the excise taxes.
Oh, no kidding. It's like back of the truck kind of stuff.
It's the change of how we do direct the sale and the definition of who is allowed direct the sale, something we closed last year on a loophole. There's some other issues coming up regarding brand transfers. So most people don't realize in the alcohol industry, you don't the retailers and the restaurants don't buy by a wholesaler name, nor do they buy manufacturer name. They buy by brand name. So as you know, Budweiser, the king of beers, quote unquote, right? I mean, they like to call themselves. Has actually a lot of different brands. But if you're a restaurant or a retailer, a package store, you don't actually buy all the brands. You just buy the brands you want.
Yeah, right,
But people
right.
don't realize that people sell brands to each other. So, if a manufacturer, another manufacturer cut a deal, they'll sell a brand off. Or just like any other business, they'll spin a brand off. Put the brand out as a sitter and just spin it off its own company over time, or they'll absorb another brand. So maybe there's a alcohol a manufacturer that's worth, let's say, $2 billion, and Budweiser sees their sales and they're like, okay, I mean, we should look at acquiring you, right? Then the tracks between the wholesalers and manufacturers, which has a ripple down effect on the price structure down to the retailers and the
But
restaurants.
isn't the alcohol tax paid by the wholesaler when it comes into the state?
Yeah, but if you don't use a wholesaler, then you don't have to pay taxes or
Ah,
that.
gotcha. Okay.
This has been a legit problem for actually a long time, and it's not surprising in every state that because every state does collect excise tax and alcohol, unless you're in New Hampshire, which basically is the alcohol. The state is the alcohol. They're always looking for ways because of the age of online selling.
Okay, all right. Wow, it's like today's version of bootlegging, essentially.
Essentially, yes, it's kind of like looking for legal loopholes, and every time you think you built a better mousetrap, someone else finds a way out. And
Interesting.
this is the thing about the law that people tend to forget, particularly in the business sectors that I deal with, as well as labor workforce and so forth, is that you put a law and regulation in place, the people will test the limits of that to see how far it can get away with until the regulator or enforcement agency comes back and says, yeah, they really found a way through here, and there's not much we can do because they're not wrong about how to implement the extent of those regulations. So
Gotcha.
it
Interesting.
comes back to us, trying to find ways to address the issue, including looking at, like, are they really doing something bad? And we talk to investigators and review the information that's publicly available, because I can't get private information. I can't get publicly available information as well on investigations. And I'm like, yeah, we got to figure out how to deal with this. So it's like an ongoing thing here. It's and also, I mean, we also do things like interstate compacts. There's a real movement, especially post-COVID, about interstate compacts of various professions. And we'll see if those have any interest, because I really don't like to reduce our standards regarding licensing, and also allow lower standard licensees in here.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think nursing, I think, is a good example where nurses are looking to be licensed in other states.
Yeah, we got a nursing compact that was passed on the law last year. Implementation is not clear where that's going just yet with DPH.
No.
Obviously, you guys know I did the dental hygienist licensing with foreign dentists, but that's actually a little more of a horizontal, slightly lower shift where you go from a fully licensed dentist to a licensed hygienist. It's not identical professions, but they have hopefully, well, they should have similar educations depending on what country you're from. And if the educational standards meet Massachusetts, and you can pass the exam, then that should be, all good in that type of reciprocating licensing. I'm trying to think of a few others. Veterans, active service, military personnel and their families, we do have, and I think it's been a little bit challenging than people give it credit for, reciprocal licensing for certain professions, to allow them to have their family members work in Massachusetts, because military families do travel. And that might be a licensed accountant in your state where you first started with your family in the military, and then moved to a different state, that may not be reciprocated properly.
Oh,
So you
interesting.
have those issues, and then you also have military personnel professional standards, which can also be transferred into another professional license, provided they meet all the relevant qualifications. And it's an interesting conversation, because people think everything's apple to apples, and it's more like a granny versus a red.
No, I see what you mean. Well, particularly with, I mean, every state has different tax laws, right?
That's correct. And every state had different standards regarding consumer protection. Every state has different standards regarding licensing. It's very confusing for other countries that and other people from other countries visit here, because they don't understand that we don't have a federalized licensing system. It is state by state, and the professional licenses are predominantly state by state. So, for as you guys know, I'm an attorney. I'm good in Massachusetts. I did enter the bar for the U.S. District Court here on the federal level, which I have never used, but I was told coming out of law school, it's a good idea to do anyway. It's worth the money. So you never know, kind of thing. Just hang on to your extra bar admissions. But I can't practice in any other state. Unless I get temporary permission from the Bar Association, Board of Bar Overseers,
Right. Yeah. Actually, that came up in the recent Karen retrial, right, with some of the attorneys on the defense side.
Correct. It would have to have temporary status
Yeah.
here, or you have to pass the exam or meet other reciprocal requirements, depending on where.
Right.
So, I mean, I mean, that's kind of how it works. And some professions, have more ease because of interstate business between Massachusetts and the other six states surroundings, right? If you're on the New York border, you're obviously not common to travel back and forth. Rhode Island, Massachusetts has a lot of border synergy and economy, passing back and forth from online work. So, you got that too. One of the things in COVID that was a little interesting was a virtual work for groups like therapists. So, if you're a child therapist, like in the school system, and you're working from home and doing video calls from New Hampshire because that's where you live, technically you're practicing without a license in New Hampshire.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I'm not sure how we're going to address that because it's not like a Massachusetts licensee, a license agency can tell New Hampshire to have their folks that are working in Massachusetts but physically in New Hampshire practicing by taking a client in Massachusetts virtually.
Right. Oh, that's an interesting dilemma. Yeah, something that would right you would not have faced prior to COVID.
Yeah, virtual telehealth is not new issue, but a lot of telehealth issues always been within your state lines, particularly with hospitals in the early onset of this technology. COVID accelerated this technology to be more a home-based medical care, which I fully support by. I think if you're able to get good quality advice and care video-wise and given high quality of cameras, these days you can get a lot of good video and pictures to your medical provider. But I mean, obviously, if something you've seen in person, you definitely should do so. But this creates an interesting conversation that's still ongoing, not necessarily just of us, but also all states regarding how do you manage interstate practices of licenses that are using today's technology. And since we're not a federal system, it was a federal licensing system, then it wouldn't be relevant. And
Right.
every country has all the licenses at the federal level.
Right, for the whole country. Yeah. Interesting, interesting. Ah, a little insight into what Tacky has to deal with on a daily basis.
They deal with a lot of different things. As I remind folks, masslegislature.gov, our website, does post our public hearings, not just mine, but everyone's, as well as the formal informal sessions. And we are posting our committee votes online pursuant to the rules, which I find funny because I think polling isn't a vote, but let's not get too nitpicky or Tacky's idea of what the difference votes are. We do basically poll the members, which means that it sounds like we're polling the members. We're just seeing where people are, and we issue those poll results online. So everyone's doing a different format. Just to warn you, we didn't create a uniform format. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. I'm trying to find the simplest way to get my stuff onto the website.
Oh, you mean every committee is doing differently?
Yes, everyone's doing it. Some are
Oh,
actually
well.
doing like one bill at a time. You click on the bill, and you have to click on another tab to find the individual votes.
Oh, that's confusing. Okay.
Yeah, my preference is to put a sheet up. Just throw a sheet up, and then you can scan down the PDF, to find your bills and the actions taken on. Yeah, there's still a bit of a growing pain issue regarding a committee chairs and disseminating onto the internet. So, if you are one of those folks that, really enjoy seeing us work or like to look at, bills, again, I encourage people to form a account at MALegislature.gov. That helps you track. You actually don't need my assistance. All the stuff you can do on your own. If you do need help on getting a copy of a bill or finding a bill or looking for a bill history, obviously give us a phone call or an email, and we're going to do our best to get information to you that if you need that type of assistance.
Yeah, okay. Any more information at all about federal cuts impacting Massachusetts yet, Tacky?
Unclear. I mean, some of the stuff is phased in 2026, 2027. I swear, our politicians sometimes think we're stupid. This is coming from a politician that they all think we're dumb. I mean, obviously you guys can guess what's going on here, right? I mean, if you start delaying Medicaid implementation cuts as well as major cutbacks on SNAP programs, welfare, housing, and everything else, and you try to make it pretend like you didn't do anything during the election cycle, but cut taxes and spend more money, but you're actually saving, you're claiming you're closing a deficit, you're growing. As a politician in DC saying that in the Republican Party in this instance, who are you trying to fool here? And that's what's going on here, right? I mean, I say this all the time. I mean, the public isn't stupid, and I am not stupid. We can all figure out what's going on eventually. And these little games that they play down there makes me a little bit batty because I don't like to go about doing my business like that personally. I like to think I'm a good professional and upfront about this. But those guys are claiming victory on budget cuts, but you won't feel them too deep into the 26th election cycle, and they hope you don't notice you lost your health insurance by then. So the numbers are very broad in terms of implementation, and we still got the regulatory process, like with Dr. Oz, and Medicare and Medicaid, which by the way is called MassHealth. It's got to implement these reductions, and we'll see how they actually do it and what these reductions look like. So we got to wait and see. And others, communications could be interesting because it wouldn't surprise me one bit where, in certain states, the congressional people start saying, well, you still have, Tennessee Care. I don't know what it's called over there. And not recognizing the fact Tennessee Care is Medicare and Medicaid, it's just implemented by the state, same as MassHealth isn't the blitter of the federal programs. So we implement a lot of federal programs on behalf of them. So, it wouldn't surprise me that there's going to be some messaging where they're going to stop saying that you have state benefits that aren't really there because these congressional folks will be trying to mislead their voters that way.
Interesting. Okay, so be wary of the message and do your due diligence, right?
Yeah, we're a Democratic, as you all know, we're a fully Democratic delegation. So obviously, I support Democrats. It's not surprising. But I mean, they won't have to, the mass delegation doesn't have to do that messaging because actually many of them actually worked in the legislature at one time or had business up here at one time. So they are familiar with somewhere with how MassHealth operates and don't have to, sell to Massachusetts voters, what the implementation of these reductions are. If you're a Republican state, particularly if you're a Republican state of a high Medicare usage, some states have Medicare and Medicaid usage, over 30%. Some states have SNAP food stamp benefits that are over 25% of the population. And they tend to be lower income states, no tax states, lower per capita states, but also, oddly enough, tends to be Republican states.
Right. Yeah, I know here in Quincy, Manatt Community Health Center is watching the whole issue very cautiously because a large part of their clientele is Medicaid recipients.
And yeah, and community health centers are the backbone of local health care. People don't realize that. But also, it is the backbone of local health care in rural communities, again,
Right.
which predominantly are Republican districts. And we found this out during COVID, where getting vaccines out to community health centers where they don't have ICUs to service a square mile area of like 100 miles. And it still takes people, hours to get to a community health center. And getting a vaccine to the location doesn't have proper refrigeration. Then it was really problematic for some of these more sparsely located areas, which again tend to be Republican districts. So, those community health centers are going to see a big reduction. And I'm curious how they spin doctor this as kind of like see again catching any news clippings of how, these folks in those districts start spin doctoring it like, we did you a favor.
What is happening in the cannabis industry, Massachusetts tacky?
Well, we did pass a cannabis control reform law here, waiting for the Senate to do the same. Obviously, my committee has THC drink related items, which the committee's holding on to until we wait and see how the Conference Committee on the Cannabis Control Commission reform comes out because, they already have put in a THC drinks regulation in that bill. So we'll wait and see what the Senate does and see what the Conference Committee does next after that. But yeah, it's the regulatory agency is it's a mess. And the House recommendations to blow the whole thing up, change the entire structure, make a clear chain of command, and move it out of the Treasury and back in, and back go back to the well, not back to, but go into the executive branch, go into the governor's offices. So yeah, it's not good. It's a mess.
And the market, it seems saturated. I know a lot of smaller companies are closing up.
Well, you got two problems going on here. One, as I kind of keep repeating myself, any consumer industry has a saturation point. There is a point where everyone's got what they need, and there's no more new customer development. Like, they're not creating new customers. And cannabis is one of those interesting ones, right? I mean, again, how many of us listen to this call sit at home teaching the kid to smoke pot, right? Or have gummies at age, like, 15, right? It's not like, parents are sitting there encouraging substance abuse usage of any type, whether it be alcohol or marijuana or anything else at home, right? However, I do remind folks that certain products does have social influences. For example, alcohol is the most common because, not like, people don't realize that when you have a beer, your child is actually watching you have a beer when you're actually with the child if you drink that way. Conversely, you see alcohol in movies and television, which has been greatly reduced since we were both kids, like massively reduced. Smoking is no longer a thing you see on television really anymore. That's also been taken away. No more cigarette ads. You and I remember cigarette commercials. We're old enough. And you don't even in movies, you see less cigarettes and other smoking apparatus. It still exists in movies, but they're less of. But one of the big changes is social influencers. So you have a lot of celebrities and social influencers pushing alcohol products on things like TikTok and Reels and other social media platforms, which may attract young users. And this is how Juul got started, right? They just started targeting younger adults as a of quote unquote safer end of smoking, which I remind people inhaling water is not good for your lungs because that's what you're doing. But there's that component as well. So the consumer market is a little more complex than I think give people credit for. But cannabis actually has another problem, is the black market is still out there. As you saw, I believe in Braintree, was a bust in Braintree, I think, of
Not
marijuana.
long ago, yeah.
Yeah, and the black market is still cheaper than the legitimate licensed market in Massachusetts because, I mean, we have a high regulatory structure to ensure that your product isn't going to kill you. You are what you're getting. You got
Right.
black market, you're taking your chances. Maybe you are getting what you're getting, maybe you're not. I can't, you have no way to know, truly know. There's no control command. The other thing is that in place in cannabis is that as more states around us adopt legalization of cannabis, there's no it's going to end cross state line purchases,
Sure, yeah.
and that's happening as well. So as there's more cannabis prevalence around our surrounding area, now why would you want to drive to Massachusetts when you can drive, if a third of the time someplace closer in your home state?
Sure, yeah, I understand. Yeah. So it's got that'll flesh itself out. The market will flesh that out, right?
Well, it's capitalism. I
Yeah.
mean, people forget regulatory entities and regulated entities, are, part of the structure. But because of the nature of the product, we want greater consumer safety to ensure that you are getting what you're getting, because there's no other way to know if you don't create a mechanism of testing and control. This is back in the THC drinks. Part of the House bill on reforming the Cannabis Control Commission is to include a method of DPH to establish a testing method to ensure that the THC drinks you're getting really are THC drinks. Because right now, if you buy any THC drink, it's 100% unregulated. You have no idea what's in there. And actually, are you getting true of an advertising? I can't answer that question because there's no way to know. So unless you independently test these products yourselves through, I'll let you pay to go to a lab and have it do for you. You really don't know. This is a new problem, right? This is a problem in the days of snake oil salesmen, right? Back, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
The snake oil charmers, they called them, right?
Yeah, it's just today, we want greater awareness for consumers to be safe on stuff that we legalize you purchase. That's all.
I know on this program we like to talk from time to time about the economy, and just I think yesterday some tariff agreements agreed to with some Asian countries.
Yeah, it's picking off a couple of the smaller ones, right? I mean, they did a thing of Vietnam, between 20 and 40% tariffs depending on origin, location of the country that moved the product through Vietnam or made in Vietnam, depending on the situation, but also zero tariffs for U.S. goods go to Vietnam. Vietnam has not even 1/20th of the capital of the United States, so it's going to be the cheapest U.S. goods to go in there. And like I said before, products like Coca-Cola or like Kentucky Fried Chicken or some of those type of retail restaurants, we have to compete locally against the local product, but it, you know, because the per capita is so low, the price is so low, the price is so low because people don't have money. You know, the Philippines had done the same deal. You know, no tariffs going in the Philippines, but again, we're talking about a very low per capita country. I mean, we're, you know, we're, it's got to be at least 20 times smaller than us. So again, great, no tariffs, but can they buy their stuff, right? Let's be honest about this. But you know, on the flip side, we're going to be paying 20% to 40% more on products from Vietnam. They're going to be paying another 19% more from products in the Philippines, which you get a lot of produce from, tropical fruits, for
Oh,
example.
interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
Yeah, rubber is actually a big thing from, I think that's a Thai issue, but a lot of Southeast Asian countries does rubber. So yeah, I mean, there's going to be dimensional costs will be baked into your consumer prices. And then you have Japan, which the details still coming out, but it looks like 15% tariffs on cars and other products coming in. Still questioning about exactly what we're talking about. Details a little sketchy, but also they're going to invest, you know, $500 million. Is it no half $1 trillion? Is it 500
Yeah,
billion?
500 million, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a billion or million. I don't remember. I think it might be a
Oh,
billion.
billion. I think it's with a B,
Yeah,
billion. Yeah.
over a certain amount of time in U.S. industry and buy a certain amount of agricultural goods. But you know, some of the stuff he was pushing just made no sense. For example, you know, he wanted to push American made grown rice into Japan. Japan will not buy American grown rice. It's a cultural issue. Even though rice prices are very high in Japan right now, you know, he's under some misconception they'll just take anything you want, like that's a bigger country. This is kind of the ignorance and the backward thinking of what's going on in DC is like, oh, well, they have a shortage. They must take our stuff. They think capitalism is transferable. I mean, if that's true, then you should stop eating McDonald's and go to Wendy's, which is cheaper. If that's the
Right.
case,
Yeah,
get that
exactly.
and go to like the little, you know, little shop at home because clearly you eat any kind of hamburger from anywhere, right? I mean, you know, this is the degree of like, you know, degree of like, what are you thinking, buddy? Because if you know anything about Japanese culture, and it isn't hard to figure this out. Yeah, they have very high rice prices right now, but it's because of weird ass inflation. It's like really crazy. It's inflation in Japan's really weird. The whole economy is weird. But put that issue aside, I mean, it's not like we're going to sell, you know, all these rice growers in the United States are going to do well in Japan. They're not. So, you know, they're going to you know, buy more agricultural products, but you know, which ones are actually going to sell in Japan? So this could be a little bit of a smoke screen that you know, US industry is more likely not already know the answer I just gave. And realize that the Japanese are going to buy, but realize they're never going to sell, which then they're not going to buy as much.
Right. Yeah. I mean, then the number one agreement that has not been even discussed is with China, right? They're the next biggest economy.
Yeah, China and EU are the next big ones, right? I mean, the Japan's still number four economy, but they're a stagflation economy. Their per capita is high, but the per capita hasn't moved. And they actually have a real problem because inflation is up, but wages are down now. They're moving into what we call a stagflation situation where your wages are going lower against inflation, meaning they're up 3% and wages down 3%, which means you got a 6% differential. So your spending power is greatly reduced. Again, it's going to be hard for US business to sell into a situation where people are literally losing money against inflation, much higher rate than they do in the United States. So yeah, and also have like a political turmoil. The ruling party or the majority party couldn't win the Senate majority. There's a fallen coalition. There might be no confidence coming in parliament yet again down there.
Oh.
There's an anti-immigrant, anti-foreign worker sentiment growing there, very MAGA movement in Japan, like the US, but Japan has a longer history of not allowing people born Japanese to live there or work there. They have a much longer history than we do.
Interesting.
But also a birth rate worse than us in a population, you know, that regularly gets into late 90s. So the social networks under a lot of stress, the entire social system stress because of the aging population. So Japan has a huge number of demographic and economic problems. So, but I mean, they are the, you know, fourth biggest economy. China and EU are the real two big question marks, right? I mean, you know, the EU biggest trading partners, the US. In moving goods and services back and forth, people forget it's still a $19 trillion trading bloc, even with the British in there. And the Chinese are also a $19 trillion trading bloc. Both the GDPs are about the same at the moment. And yeah, China's exports to the US is greatly reduced from the first Trump administration, 2016 today, is pretty much cut in half. direct shipments from China to the US, which is why the Chinese feel they can hang out longer. But also, its economy is also dusty. They're suffering from stagflation in China. And they're very resistant to allow US to come in because you may not realize this, but if you're a manufacturer in the US that's manufacturing in China, you're making stuff cheaper to sell back in the US. Well, you're just going to recycle your same goods inside China itself. So it's like, I'm making a product in China because it's cheaper to make in the US and want to sell it to US customers. But if I have open market to China, those products that I make in China that's coming to the US, I'm just going to keep those in China and sell them in China
Okay, all
and
right.
undercut the local Chinese market. Yeah, it's people don't realize it's a little more nuanced than people give it credit for. Same thing of India. India, it's again a very low per capita country compared to ours. But they have the same fear that if you are now making US companies making stuff in China cheaply and then they ship it to India, they're going to undercut local market, or they're going to use cheap Indian labor to undercut their own economy. You think about it that way, you realize their concerns because they can't grow a local economy if US businesses are using literally their own cheap labor to sell back to their own cheap labor, not giving local industry equal competitive advantages because the United States has so much more money than you do. I mean, we have so much more money that we can put in, as a capitalist country. And then those that are still on a lower per capita and still developing economies. China is actually developing economy because the per capita is too low. The EU, on the other hand, has a very broad per capita depending on each country. But for the most part, I mean, most countries in the EU have better spending power than China.
Well, I'm sure it's most of Western Europe, right? We're talking about here.
Yeah, most Western Europe has much, Eastern Europe is challenging, but Western Europe is better spending power than China. Canada has a lot better spending power than China does. So, I mean, they're able to, interest in buying US goods, and it also buffers against, cheap US goods going in there because you're competing against a local market where people have enough money to be more discretionary in their purchasing. So it forces US
Although
customers.
it'd be a lower profit margin, I would think, though.
Oh, the profit margin is going to be very challenging. Yeah. If you go to the EU or Canada versus trying to sell into a lower per capita market. So, it's the people like, well, why wouldn't they let us in? Well, that's a problem, right? If you have cheap US product going in, it undercuts the local economy trying to develop. China's big fear is the tech industry, right? I mean, they have a second problem that other countries don't have equal problem with. And the problem is they're fearing, open internet because it's a closed internet society.
It's like North Korea, right?
It's very censored, right? So, the tech companies here, are very used to having open societal access, which means a lot of free flowing of ideas. Agree or disagree with it, but they have a free flowing of ideas. I wish people would actually expand their horizons on these ideas, but that's a different problem. So the Chinese really has a separate issue regarding tech in particular about, controlling information flow inside their own country.
They want the government to be the only idea.
That is correct. That is one of the tenets of communism. Socialism doesn't have that tenet. It is a communist concept where the only idea is the government's idea, or more accurately, the Communist Party's idea, more accurately speaking, because they're one and the same. Because even though the Chinese tell us they have minority parties, but they're actually rigged minority parties. They create their own minority parties, just to say they have minority party, like literally manufactured. You, and you are going to join this other party just because we need to have you there.
We need it to look like we have multiple parties.
Yeah, for example, there is a representative of Taiwan, but they're not from Taiwan exactly.
Oh, interesting.
Taiwanese that migrated permanently to China who are now representing Taiwan in their Congress, like two people, right? Out of like
Oh, is that right?
500. Yeah, it's just, again, it's to give the, just say you have it kind of scenario. So
It's control. It's power and control.
that's correct. So, I mean, the irony is this. I mean, he's trying to, he's opened up markets so far. Well, Japan's an exception, but they have right now a very stagnant economy again because of nature inflation they're having. But he's opened markets that have no money to spend on goods or create situations where certain US businesses can pump a lot of money in and try to undercut local economic development. In return, you and I are going to pay tariffs on top of the past tariffs because these are new tariffs under existing tariffs from 2016. So these are not like new baseline. This is on top of what exists. So, speculation among economists is that it's going to be 15% tariffs, perhaps across the board, perhaps up to 20%. But if it's a country that has existing tariffs like China, it's that tariff from 2016 on top of whatever they come up with now, which is going to be eating into profit margins by the corporations that get the wholesale goods, or if the retailer can't eat that, well, it's going to have to be 100% passed on to you. Those numbers I said over and over again during the first part of April, we won't see the real impact probably into this month, next month, and the month after October. Amazon claims that people are buying Christmas stuff now. Who knows how true that is? At some point, the pre-tariff or the lower tariff stockpile is going to run out with the big box stores in particular, so Walmart, Costco, BJ's, those guys, and Amazon. People forget 40% of Amazon is not Amazon. 40% of Amazon is other businesses, and some of
Yeah,
those
they're just a
businesses
broker, basically. They're the pass-through.
that last through, and some of those businesses are not enjoying Amazon purchasing power. So you might see a disparity in prices very much on Amazon from third party groups or businesses selling on there. And perhaps Amazon has a similar product, and you guys can deal with price structure comparison of who's been impacted by tariffs. Again, starting really in August, September, and October.
Interestingly, these agreements with these developing countries might even open up entrepreneurial folks in those countries to compete w with the US.
Perhaps it's again, it's a cost of capital, right? Can you get the money to do it? I mean, there's a reason why foreign countries like to open the US stock market, because we have money. And foreign investors are heavily invested in the US market. People don't realize exactly how much the planet actually uses the US liquidity system through our stock market system, because they trust the system. It is highly regulated. And again, you can make a lot of money, you can also lose a lot of money. But it's the place where every business tries to create liquidity for their business to grow. And in smaller countries, yeah, you're right. I mean, entrepreneurism is the big thing, because if you have a high unemployment rate, Philippines is an example that they have a very high unemployment rate, you're forced into entrepreneurism. And that's,
Yeah, you have nothing to lose, right?
you have nothing to lose. And entrepreneurs, in a low-cost country, yeah, it's low cost for you and me, but it's not low cost for them because they live there.
Yeah, obviously. So it's a, I mean, any business is a risk, right? So and kudos to folks who try it because it's a big risk.
Yeah, and there's more countries of lower per capita, like really low per capita, than wealthy countries. I mean, you talk about the EU, big bloc, Korea, South Korea, Japan. They have good per capitas. Canada has a good per capita. China is actually not a great per capita, but the country's massive. That's the problem. I mean, when you're that size, the per capita to be used per capita, you'd have a GDP of like $4 trillion. I mean, that's monstrous. But I mean, the interesting part of the trade deals, again, is hyper focus on the countries that have higher per capitas, more first world industrialized. But the smaller countries are in a quandary, because again, if you're a diamond mining country and you have a trade deficit because you basically sell one thing to the US, well, it's not like regular people making money on diamonds. It's US corporations buying diamonds, or US corporations or European corporations or other corporations in their mining. Then what are those miners buying? Because they're not exactly making US wages.
One sleeping giant we never talk about is Mexico.
Yeah, Mexican economy's really grown. I mean, so there's really a large misconception that Mexicans are the ones coming over the border illegally to come to the US. That's not true. It's really other people from Latin Central America fleeing, basically people trying to kill them. I mean,
Right, they're coming through Mexico because that's the only way.
it's the only way. But I mean, they're mostly coming from, a vast majority come from places that where the government's literally trying to kill them, right? I mean, things have gotten so bad that they got to get out, and political dissidents, and basically just scary places to be. But yeah, no, Mexico is a top, I think they're now at the top 15 GDP country. The education system is much better than people realize, and they really continue to grow their synergy along the America Southwest and Texas regarding their economies. It's very synergetic. And again, the biggest, most busy border crossing in North America is the Tijuana crossing at the, well, it's not Tijuana, it's really San Diego, Tijuana. But
Right.
that is the busiest crossing in the United States and actually North America between two countries regarding day-to-day travel because people travel back and forth from work all the time as well as trade and commerce. So as I like to say, we don't live in a border community. Actually, a lot of America doesn't live in a border community where their economy is synergetic. But you know all these national policies, it does have a negative effect on somebody, and it's those folks that live in those border economies. My friend, who's from San Diego, told me the tariffs have already resulted in food prices in Southern California going up by 50%.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, she was talking to her dad about it in San Diego, and she's like, he's losing his mind because of geography. Generally, the produce is, I won't say cheaper, but I mean, it's definitely cheaper to Massachusetts produce if you're coming from the same location because it's just cost of business doing lower going just across the border from Mexico.
Sure. Yeah. No, I have to come all the way across the country to come here. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're used to higher produce prices up here than we would from border states against Mexico because, again, transport. But for them, it's the first time they've really felt this massive like produce shock.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. What's going on in the district these days, Jackie?
Well, the city's doing a great job continuing a 400 celebration. There's a lot of concerts going on. There isn't too much else happening after July 4th, as those us in Quincy land knows. You know, August Moon Festival is August 17th in front of the high school and Cottington Street again, which will be a fun day depending on how it goes, and I'll be there. But it's been pretty quiet overall. I mean, you and I have talked about offline about the local elections. Remind folks again, September 2nd is preliminary elections if you have a preliminary election. And, you know, obviously, we encourage people to vote or get a mail-in ballot or vote early. It is a very early preliminary, if you think about it. And people may still be away and people forget about this preliminary election. So
Yes, it's the day after Labor Day, so yeah.
it's very early on. And like we saw July 4th, it wouldn't surprise me that people take that week off vacation from the first to the end of the week. As been part of the week prior. So it could be like amazingly low turnout. However, we do have so many different ways for you can vote early, get a mailing ballot, you have an absentee ballot. You know, there's plenty of ways to get your vote in. So just reminded everybody, you know, please do register a mailing ballot if you're going to be on vacation that week.
Yep, August 23rd is the last day to register to vote in that September 2nd preliminary.
Yeah, and visit the city clerk's website because they manage the local elections. And if I remember correctly, the city council also finalized their vote on polling locations. So you should really check the city clerk's website again to find out where your polling location is.
By all accounts, the increased state police patrols on the boulevard are working.
Yeah, I mean, people don't realize they live close enough to the beach that, you know, something happens. Even though I'm not right against the beach, I do have a lot, you know, Black's Peak Marsh is an open area. I mean, I can hear sirens and people try to drag race at 3 in the morning, whatever, if they get loud enough. So not exactly on the beach, but I can hear enough through the marshland. But yeah, I mean, you know, the delegation, you know, with Bruce leading this issue, you know, we increase overtime patrols, which was passed almost in the budget the governor signed on July. I think she signed July 4th, actually.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Signed July 4th, you know, put that overtime money in for Quinnesure Drive and Frenchburg Parkway. We all know as things get hotter, more people use the beach from all over the geographic area. And, you know, 99.9% of the time, people are pretty good about it. But, you know, the police presence, you know, keeps that small percentage of folks that could be problems, you know, from creating bigger problems.
Yeah, one thing I didn't realize that I learned recently is that commercial vehicles are not allowed on Quincy Shore Drive.
And they're not allowed on Frenchburg Parkway.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah.
Yeah, the parkways, the DCR parkways do not allow commercial vehicles, well, large commercial vehicles. So Store Drive, for example, you shouldn't see tractor trailer. You will not see, actually, you will not see tractor trailers on Store Drive.
Well, no, because they can't fit under
Exactly. That's 100% why it was a
bridge.
massive deterrent
Yes.
regarding using those DCR roads. So, but yeah, you know, also in Castle Island, you don't see big tractor trailers. And same thing on Quincy Drive and Furnishbook. You have to find alternative routes, unless you're like going to the gas station, for example. to fill up the gas station across your drive. I mean, that's allowed because you have a destination of a business there.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. But I saw some troopers had some of those big 10-wheel dump trucks pulled over right on the boulevard. I'm like, oh, I didn't know they couldn't do that.
Yeah, most people don't realize that they can't because you never thought about it.
Right.
You never see it, but it's all the time. And until you see an anomaly shows up, then you realize that, oh, well, that I never noticed that it was never there before.
Right. Yeah. Which kind of makes sense because it's a pretty narrow roadway. The lanes are pretty narrow.
And for example, Fringesburg Parkway, has the MBTA track lane on it at the corner of Newport and Fringesburg Parkway. So, big commercial tractor trailer wouldn't make it down there. So that's why you have 3A, which is Hancock Street, which is the alternative three route, and commercial traffic can go through there as well as Bergen Parkway, but also the expressway.
I see the actually the C Street project is coming right along. They're getting the new traffic signals ready to go.
Yeah, I was last there for a wake, and I was at the Boy Scout Bar Drive about, was it June? I think it was there in June. And a friend passed away, and we did a service there about 6 weeks ago. And I was there for July 4th, did the walk, could see the new construction going up. I've not been down C Street since. So I'm sure a lot of things happened between July 4th and now.
Yeah, definitely. But that's a state project too.
Yeah, state project. Well, city project, state supported. So
Right,
it's a
right.
city project, but the state's been contracted to manage the project at Department of Transportation. And it's about a $10 million project, which is state funded. So it is a city project, a contract to the state, but the state is also paying for
Gotcha. Okay.
it. Yeah, I know it's weird because at the end of the day, it's not going to be state controlled. It is a city project.
Oh, right. Yes, that's right. The city will own the infrastructure, right.
Yeah, given the size and scope of the project, I mean, Department of Transportation was a very logical contractor to bring in. It's a weird relationship where the contractor, but not, it's a thing, right? It's a weird relationship. We don't actually hire a private company. Actually, it'll bring the state in, but the irony is the state's paying for the project for the city, but the city is co-managed, well, really managing it, but delegated to the Department of Transportation. It's very interesting project.
It's a partnership.
Yeah, the state will have no control of the lights. State will not have future control of maintenance. Maintenance will be controlled by the city.
Right.
Enforcement's gonna be entirely by the city. Everything's gonna be owned by the city at the end. But because state tax dollars went into it, the taxpayers statewide, contributed to your road on C Street, and it takes it off your bonding on at the state at city level. So municipal taxpayers don't have to pick up that cost directly. You do pay your state taxes, but remember, when there's a state project in your city that's paying for a city project, state money on the city project, it's you're basically sharing the money with all taxpayers around the state. Same thing in
Yep.
a federal project, same principle. You got federal money going to a city project, it's all federal taxpayers that are helping you pay that.
Absolutely. Yep. It's
Yeah,
a
that's how you
share
have
alike.
it. Yeah, that's kind of how you look at that, right? We all pay state taxes. Yeah, state money. But it's all state taxpayers helping you.
Right. It's, people in Western Mass helping us and us helping people in Western Mass.
Yeah, but we eat more money than Western Mass.
Well, yeah. There is
If
that.
you're not aware of it, if people west of 495 doesn't like us on the east side because per state dollar, because of nature of density and our higher economic standing in some ways, because we generate more economic development than Western Mass. They actually lose money on the state tax dollars because we consume it instead. Boston is easy, the biggest consumers of state tax dollars by far.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But I mean, even Quincy has a disproportionate amount. We'll transition quickly because we're going to look like I think we're going to vote on Chapter 90 transportation funding today. Chapter 90 provides basically local aid to city and towns for road and bridge work. And we're going to put in $3 million this year. For locals and cities and towns for local projects. I actually am waiting for a breakdown on how much Quincy's going to get. I suspect it's going to be in the high 2 million zone, but I don't have a direct number until transportation gives us the final count. And then we put some more money regarding half a billion, $500 million, $500 million for bridge paving at the highway division at Department of Transportation. We do about 185 million for more infrastructure regarding pedestrian, bicycle walkways in congested areas. We've always had a little bit of extra money for like emergency cases. So we always have a little bit of a set aside just in case something goes really, really bad somewhere in the state. Like I think the sinkholes you saw up in the Merrimack Valley during those major rains, where they just washed out roads. Not all those roads were just city roads, but some of those were state properties too. So because of the nature of the weather, we built in for contingencies regarding that with Department of Transportation. So the total bond's going to be a $1.185 billion bond. It looks like we're voting for it. That number may be adjusted when we go to after the debate today, and then we'll see what the Senate does on this bill when we send it over. So we are look. It's something we're going to vote on that this afternoon, unless something goes wrong before the debate begins. Debate starts at 1, it's about what time is it about now? It's just about 1:01 now. So at some point we can get called upstairs. I haven't heard the intercom go off yet. So this is live from the State House, well, live as it gets for us today.
All right, we'll get an update next week.
Yeah, so that's we transitioned nicely to something we're doing up here.
Yes, I planned that out all along, Jackie. Seeing as you're gonna have to get going, how do we get a hold of you?
Well, obviously, I'm in State House room 42 of the State House. We're still here. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370 is the number to the office. We are staffed. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, TACKEY.CHAN at mahouse.gov. I do collect testimony in that email, as well as constituent email, as well as advocacy email. And hopefully we'll get some more updates regarding the impact on federal government in my email on the state as well, from not just the feds, but also third party interest groups doing their independent analysis, as well as state government doing their analysis. A lot of people try to figure this out. But I mean, we do prioritize constituent service first, always constituent service first. TackyChan.org is our resource page. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. You can see pictures of me meeting people. Like I met the Nepalese ambassador this week is one of the things I did. He came to visit the State House, and we had to talk about Nepalese US relations or Nepalese Massachusetts relations too. We're at Instagram now. So through my Facebook, we have my Instagram, and what else is there? Oh yeah, mlegislature.gov, which I talked about earlier. And of course, you and I on a weekly or bi-weekly basis, we'll sit down and have a chit chat about whatever comes to mind with Joe.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Always great to catch up.
Always good to talk to you, Joe.